Hello, it's Brody. I love bringing mummification to you each week, and if you'd like to support me to keep doing that, you can make a once-off donation through the Acast supporter feature. There's no regular subscription, and your donation will help pay our music license, buy audio gear, and put fuel in my car so I can keep interviewing the amazing women who share their stories with us. There's a link in the show description and episode show notes.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Mummification. I'm your host, Brody Matner. This podcast is a space for women and parents to talk about how they're feeling. And sometimes they feel like swearing. So this episode may not be suitable for young ears. Today I'm chatting with Penny Moody, mum to Benji, 5, and Elsie, 2. Thank you for chatting with me today.
No worries.
So you've told parts of your story and what it's like for you living with obsessive compulsive disorder on The Imperfects and No Filter with Mia Friedman, and I'll put links to those podcast episodes in the show notes because they're really interesting episodes and you're so generous and honest with how much you share. But what I'd really love to chat about today and what I'd like to hear about is how living with OCD has been for you as a mum.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'll start with our universal question. If you were stuck on a desert island and you could take a meal, a drink and a personal item, what would they be?
Oh, gosh. Meal is a hard one. I don't really have a favourite meal. I feel like I panic when people ask me this question. It's like when they ask what your favourite movie is. Oh. I'm like, there are too many. I don't know. I'll just go with what I eat the most, which is probably like a pesto pasta or like a pesto gnocchi. So I think I'd do something pretty simple like that. Drink, I mean, I think I'm just fantasizing about alcohol at the moment because I'm 5 months pregnant. So it has to be alcoholic. Has anyone not said alcohol?
I think I've had like one or two.
Yeah. I think
it's either coffee or alcohol.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense. I think it would be a pina colada because I was actually on a desert island once. Well, it wasn't a desert island, but it was an island in Zanzibar, traveling with friends in my early 20s. And we actually lived on pina coladas and cigarettes, I think, and it was heaven. It was, and really cheap pina coladas, and I think I put on about 10 kilograms because of all the coconut cream. But yeah, I think I would have to say pina colada. And one personal item, I mean, the obvious one is a phone. I think I would say phone because then I've got music. I think it would mainly be, it was some sort of music device.
Yep.
Maybe a Discman. Maybe I'll go old school. yeah, I think something to listen to music.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to start, and just as a bit of background, are you able to explain what OCD is and what subtype of OCD you live with?
Yep. Yeah, I can definitely try to explain what OCD is. I mean, I think at its core it's a neurobiological disorder, I guess. It's a mental illness. It's basically made up of, you know, as you would imagine, obsessions and compulsions. obsessions will come in the form of fears. So it's basically fear around uncertainty, and that can be around so many different things. Most people learn to live with a certain amount of uncertainty because we can never be certain about anything in life, or we can never be 100% certain. When you've got OCD, that uncertainty is very, very frightening, and you usually latch on to certain kind of fears. And then to try to neutralise those fears, you develop compulsions, which might make you feel better for a little while, but over the course of time, you know, usually make things worse. So, yes, that's a very, like, general kind of description of what OCD is. And from what I've read, it when I say neurobiological disorder, it seems like it's genetically passed down. That's what I think the research suggests. I could be wrong, but that's what I've read. But the biological part of it isn't always active. So, like, maybe, you know, it's not till you're 30 that you'll start getting symptoms, or even later in life. I think it's different for everyone. So, but in terms of what kind of subtype or category of OCD, it's kind of hard to really tease that out, I guess, because I think a lot of people have lots of different sort of kinds of OCD types. Like, it sort of changes a lot and morphs as you maybe get older or go through different stages in your life. But generally, what I've had is what some people call pure O. So it's more about, like, the compulsions will generally be more mental than physical. So it'll be like replaying things over in my head, or try to remember something that I've said or done, or trying to seek reassurance from someone else, which I guess could be physical, but more so than, like, lining things up perfectly or checking locks or things like that. They're the more physical compulsions. Yep. So it's been kind of more mental, which really, I guess, means it's more hidden in some ways, because people can't see what's going on in your mind. So that's what I've kind of dealt with.
So before you had Benji and Elsie, did you have concerns about how OCD might affect you post-babies?
I think I did. I think it's something I definitely thought a lot about. But I was always so sure I wanted kids that it never put me off having kids. I mean, I certainly know people who, you know, have a mental illness who have decided not to have kids, for example, because they don't want, and not saying you definitely pass it down, that's not the case at all, but for me it was just, I absolutely knew I wanted kids. And once I was pregnant, you know, the hormones are so all over the place. I think for the first trimester with Benji, I was pretty anxious. And I was on medication, but I didn't know if I should be on medication because I wasn't seeing a psychiatrist at the time. And I didn't know if this was going to be really like bad for the baby or not. So I actually went to see a GP who sort of specialised in mental health, and she actually, you know, said to me, like, you know, this particular medication you're on is very safe, but it's also just really important for you to be well, because if you're not well, the baby's not going to be well. And that was really, really helpful for me to hear. But at the time, I wasn't really getting much support in terms of, I wasn't really seeing a psychologist, or if I was, I wasn't seeing one very often. I hadn't been diagnosed with OCD yet. It was really just like anxiety, like, this is anxiety. So I wasn't getting the right treatment. But at some point in both my pregnancies, I just felt really good after a while. And this doesn't happen with everyone. I know lots of different experiences of people going different ways. But I think from second trimester onwards, the OCD didn't stop, but it definitely got better. So that was a bit of a relief for me. But then once I had Benji, you know, things got really hard.
Yeah.
And I think they get hard for everyone anyway. I think there's, like, you know, such a dip in your hormones, like, in your progesterone and your whatever, like, everything just goes haywire. And things were definitely, yeah, definitely got a lot harder and was definitely quite hard to cope, I think, with a little baby and a mental illness that hadn't been really properly treated.
And so when were you diagnosed?
Well, I wasn't officially diagnosed until I was about 31, so Benji would have been about one and a bit, I think. But I would have had, you know, the onset of symptoms probably from about the age of seven. So it's a long, long time of, you know, not knowing what was going on.
Decades.
Yeah, decades. Yeah. And I think what I had realised, though, I'd kind of diagnosed myself because I had read an article about someone who had been through the experience of OCD and more specifically with pure O. And I was like, that's what I've got, I think about age 26 or something. So I was pretty certain. But even then, you know, I think I saw a psychologist kind of regularly in the years leading up to my pregnancy, but I was never really comfortable talking about what was actually going on in my head. So it was really just like, oh, I'm, you know, it was just like, I'm feeling anxious about this, anxious about that. And then, of course, it was diagnosed as anxiety. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until Benji was really little and, you know, I was trying to cope with a little baby and really no sleep that I think the OCD really ramped up. And I remember just sitting in my car and feeling like I couldn't get out to do the shopping. Like I just couldn't do what I had to do day to day. I just wanted to lie down, yeah. You know, and just not do anything for a few days, which wasn't an option really. But I actually started looking into inpatient facilities. And that's when I called my dad and I was like, I need to do something. Like I really need to properly sort this out once and for all because I feel like I've just been like skirting around it for so long. But this finally needs to be like treated head on and I need to find someone who will diagnose me and who knows what they're doing with OCD. And he was like, yeah, we'll make a plan. Like even if it takes 12 months, let's try and find the people in Australia who can actually do that. And I was so lucky to have his support and actually have someone who would kind of hold my hand through it and follow up with me, you know, every few days, be like, have you done this? Have you followed this person up? And eventually I found someone who does, you know, has a lot of experience with OCD, and that was just a huge game changer for me, really.
Yeah.
It was just a huge relief finally getting the right help.
Because do things like stress and lack of sleep make it worse?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they make everything worse. Yeah. I mean, I think when you've got OCD, you're not thinking logically anyway, you know. You really don't – logic doesn't come into it. You try to be logical but it never works and you can't really out-logic OCD. And that's what I was trying to do for so many years, was trying to like work it out, like work out what's going on and try to talk it out with people. Or, you know, I would always go to my mum for reassurance and things. But the feeling of being uncertain was always there and that fear never went away. So it wasn't until I started seeing someone who actually started doing exposure therapy, which is like facing your fears and actually being able to cope with uncertainty. It wasn't until then that things actually started turning around. So, yeah, so when you've got a little baby who does sleep, but when you've got one who doesn't, and everything's turned upside down and you can't think rationally anyway, everything goes a bit haywire, yeah.
And then because Elsie had a bit of trouble with sleep.
Yes, yeah, we don't have babies who sleep.
I don't have babies who sleep either.
What the third one will be like, they've just gotten worse.
God. Hopefully number three.
What are we in for? Yeah, she didn't sleep. And about 6 weeks after we had Elsie, it was the first lockdown. And Benji wasn't going to kinder, so we were all at home. And there's this baby who was just, I mean, she just cried. She just cried for about 8 months, I reckon. And I think Hugh and I, Hugh being my husband, both went a bit insane. Mm. And the best thing I did actually was go to Masada, so go to a sleep school at 4 months, and that definitely helped. It got her into a bit of a routine, but it wasn't until about 8 months that she just stopped crying. One day she just woke up and she was just smiling, and she was just a really happy baby from then on. But up until then it was, you know, I think it was reflux or something digestive related. And yeah, it was really, really difficult. And
because you also had a toddler and you were stuck at home.
Yeah, it was full on. And it really affected Benji's behaviour. And he was trying to cope with this new person who came, you know, who's coming home, who doesn't shut up.
Yeah.
And he then tried to like out scream her a lot of the time. And it was just mental. So
that's really stressful.
It was really stressful. And at the time, you know, I was getting, you know, I was being treated, and I was still seeing my psychologist on telehealth. And but even so, you know, I think we were going a bit mad. Mm. And that's when I think your relationship starts getting really under pressure.
Yeah.
When, you know, no one's getting sleep and no one can escape. And it puts a lot of pressure on your relationship. So, you know, you start kind of snapping at each other, and, you know, sometimes you start realizing you're like, you're not really acting like you're on the same team. And I think that's something we learned, especially last year in the lockdowns, to really try to communicate better, because we're both tired at the end of the day, and sometimes for both, you know, for different reasons.
Yeah.
Like, Hugh will get up every time I have to get up, or, you know, when I was looking after Elsie, he would be getting up for Benji. So we were both exhausted, and then he'd be working full days, and by the end of the day we're both on empty.
Yeah.
But weren't really communicating it properly. So I think we learnt to do that a little bit better. Yeah. But it's really hard.
And that takes a lot of work too.
It does. A lot of practice.
Yeah.
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 Yeah,
and that's hard work to do when you're really tired.
Yeah, yeah. But just with like having a baby, like a new baby and OCD, it's such a, I think it's so common for women who maybe even don't have OCD before they have kids. I don't really know the stats on it, but I know it's so common for women who have just had a baby, or, you know, men as well, it's not just women, but anyone who's just had a little baby, to start getting intrusive thoughts. And I think that's really common. And then when it starts getting really, you know, when you don't have sleep, and it starts becoming like a bit of a loop, and it starts really affecting you day to day, that's really tough. And I know a lot of women who have ended up in a, you know, a mother baby unit, because they just can't cope. And a lot of the time, the thoughts might be around something really, really, really horrible, like harming your baby, or just, you know, just really difficult topics to talk about. And I think people then find it really hard to go seek help and be really honest about what they're talking about. So it just, because they're worried they'll, you know, child services will be called or something like that. And so they suffer in silence, and it, you know, might turn into OCD if they didn't have it before, or postnatal depression or whatever. But I think it's like a really, really big problem. I think it's happening a lot, because I just hear about it a lot. And I know so many people are suffering in silence. But I think if you can find someone you trust and someone who has experience with OCD, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to judge you.
Yeah.
They're going to listen to you, and they're going to give you methods to, you know, to deal with it and to actually get better. And I just think that's really important, because so many people are doing it by themselves.
Yeah. Not feeling like you can say it out loud.
Totally. Yeah.
Must just make it way worse.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And did you find that you had any thoughts like that? Did you find you had any thoughts about harming the kids, or?
I didn't really have those harm thoughts. I know so many people who have. It's so common. For some reason that didn't really, you know, I might have had a couple, but it didn't really stick, you know. I think maybe around that time is when some of the relationship OCD stuff started to surface, because suddenly it wasn't just me and Hugh. It was me, Hugh, and this little baby, and we're suddenly this family unit. And so to have a thought like, what if I leave this relationship that will be explosive, like that would be awful, I'll fracture this unit that's so tight, and it's not something I wanted, but it was just something that caused me a lot of anxiety just thinking about it. So then I kept thinking more and more about it, and I was like, well, how certain am I, you know? And it's just a really hard one, because you just go round and round in circles. And I think that's when that started to come into play, because I thought, oh, the stakes are higher now. Yep. And I can't do anything to break this family up. So I think that's when that started to come into play. But, yeah, like I said, I know lots of people who have had the harm thoughts as well. And actually a lot of people as well who, and I think this has to be talked about because it's not talked about, but OCD will always attack the things that you're most fearful of that you don't want. And so some people even might have the pedophilia OCD and be like, well, what if I sexually assault my child? Mm-hmm. The most awful thought to, I think, would, you know, come into any parent's or carer's head. But that can come, and again, you know, if you're already finding it hard to talk to someone and you feel like you need to talk about those thoughts, I mean, that can be terrifying. So I just know that that definitely happens a lot, and people shouldn't feel ashamed. It's part of OCD, and it's something that can absolutely come and then go with the right treatment. Yeah, there are all sorts of really awful thoughts that can attack when you're at your most vulnerable. So I think it's just important to talk about, and so people feel a little bit less alone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Did you feel you could always talk to Hugh about it?
I think I did. Not everything until more recently. I think we had a session with my psychologist, like both of us, and she was actually able to explain it all much better than I could. And that was a really, it was like a really healing thing to do, I think, because I didn't feel the pressure of having to explain it. Yeah. I could get someone else to do it for me, and someone who's really, you know, smart and succinct and just able to give him this background of how my mind works. Yeah. And that was really good for him as well, because he's like, well, it sort of took the pressure off him a little bit, because he's like, well, none of this is like to do with me, and none of it's her fault, it's just the way it is. And so that was really good. And I think even after that, I always felt like I could talk to him, but after that it was even easier, I think. And I feel very lucky that nothing's off limits with him, and I can talk to him about everything that's going on in my head. And I think that's the main thing for someone with OCD, is feeling like you can talk to someone, even if it's not so that they'll give you the answer, like, because they won't have it. They just won't have the answer. And even if you want them to give you reassurance, like, it'll help for a bit, but it won't cure it. But having someone just to listen to you, I think, is huge. I think it's so important.
Because you could always talk really openly with your parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you try and foster that openness with your kids?
Yeah, it's something we definitely try to do. And I think I was trying to think about what it was that made me feel comfortable talking to my parents, and I think it was that they modelled it themselves. Like, they were quite vulnerable with us about whatever they might be going through or whatever fears they have. My dad's someone who's always done meditation, and so he'd always go off and do these 10-day retreats, and he'd always explain to us that he needs it for his mental health and he needs it to quieten his mind. And I remember going into, like, he would meditate in the mornings, and I'd sometimes go in and just sit there with him and try to understand what he was doing. But it just meant that I think me and my brother felt like it was safe to talk to them about whatever was going on in our heads. Yeah, so I think we definitely try to do that with Benji and Elsie. Especially with Benji at the moment, he's got a lot of fears around, like, the police, like doing the wrong thing and going to jail. Like, he's really, and I think it's quite a normal thing, but I remember that as a kid and I'm like, oh no. I just, you know, it just kind of brings up a lot of stuff and I'm like, oh gosh, here we go. So I guess I try, and we both try to talk as honestly as we can. And, you know, I talk about seeing a worry doctor, and Hugh does as well, and just try to normalise that, I think. Yeah. I think that's kind of all we can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel now? I mean, you're pregnant, so maybe quite good.
Yeah, this pregnancy has been a bit different, actually. I feel much more up and down at the moment, yeah. I think. It's a good question. I think I've come to terms with the fact that I won't be really ever done with OCD. It won't be like, yep, I've clocked that and now I can move on. It's something that I'm learning to manage. Because I understand it a lot more, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because I'm able to see what's going on in my mind sort of from more of a distance, I think. So I think understanding it has had a huge impact. And then doing regular therapy has definitely helped. But I've definitely had ups and downs, and I think especially during some of the lockdowns I really regressed a bit and went into a deep, dark OCD hole again for a few days, but it wouldn't last as long. You know, I'm able to come back up a lot quicker. So I think a lot better than, you know, I was doing when I was pregnant with Benji, that's for sure.
So since you've been pregnant with Benji, he's 5?
Yeah.
So really the last 5 years – have been, I mean, and then also COVID and then you had Elsie and now you're pregnant again.
Mm.
It's been in terms of your mental health, a massive 5 years because you were diagnosed and then you started your, sorry, I can't remember the name of the treatment that
exposure response therapy,
That's a heavy 5 years.
Yeah, it is. And when you put it that way.
Sorry. Yeah, thanks very much. Shit. but also to be doing all of that with little kids is like, wow, that's you're amazing.
Oh, it's really hard. I think, you know, we've got so much support. I don't know how people do it without grandparents. I feel very lucky we've got two sets of grandparents who are always willing to help, always willing to drop what they're doing, give Hugh and I weekends away sometimes and just, you know, just have that time. Yeah. But it has been really hard and I feel like at times I haven't coped well at all. Mm. And sometimes I look at how Benji reacts to things and I think, oh, shit, I've done that to him. I've done that to him. He's seen me react that way and now that's what he does. Yeah, especially during lockdown, there were just times when I just, I mean, he would scream and I would try to scream louder or, you know, I poured a glass of water on his head once, cold water on his head because I couldn't handle the meltdown. I just couldn't do it. And I snapped. And I feel like there were a lot of those times that then caused so much guilt. But, you know, now having a bit more distance from it with things being a little bit more normal, a little bit more opened up, I just think, well, there's no wonder. Like, there's no wonder people snap because you're under so much pressure.
Yeah, it's like a bubble.
Yeah, and there's no wonder that kids are getting anxious because they absorb everything that's going on and their world's not normal now. And, of course, he's going to, you know, he's going to get more on edge and but it was so good because I actually was feeling so bad about it. I started, and I think this was partly the OCD as well, I started Googling child abuse, like is throwing water on your kid child abuse, and it was not helping the answers I was getting. And then my dad came over to take the kids for a walk and I told him and I was in such a state and he just laughed, like he really laughed. He thought it was hilarious and he said he told me a story about one of his work colleagues who had squirted her child with a tomato sauce bottle at dinner because she was so sick of him. And she and he's like, you're having it, like, she's topped you with that. Like, you know, you're fine. And I think, like, just trying to laugh about it definitely helped.
I struggle because the tantrums are so irrational.
Yeah.
And it's they're so upset and you just – all I want to do is be like, shut up, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, totally. But
there's that whole, you know, you've got to, you know, model calm behaviour and they, you know, get their calmness from you when they're feeling like
kids will not be calm.
I'm like, no. It's so hard.
It's so, so hard. And I think if you've got a few parents you can talk to about it who will relate and who will be like, yeah, called my kid a little fucker or something. Like, I don't know, like, that's not great, but, like, you need that honesty and you don't always get it. And that's when you feel really isolated. So I think being able to talk to someone about all your stuff-ups and have someone there being like, yeah, you're fine, you're great. Like, I think that's really helpful. But, gosh, yeah, there are lots of times I've been ashamed of.
Yeah, you're not alone there. But also I think, well, how I try and reframe it so that I feel a bit better about it is then being able to explain that I find it hard too and sometimes I get overwhelmed and I'm sorry that I reacted that way, but, you know, I try and go, oh, maybe this is a teachable moment.
Totally. And you can repair. Like that's what my psychologist has told me. She's like, you know, you've got this relationship with your kid and there's this space in between you and your child and you can't always control what's going on and one kid's going to react differently to how you parent than another kid and you can't always control it, you know. And as long as you're trying and you're loving them and you can try to sometimes repair what you've, you know, maybe things that you're a bit ashamed of, like you're saying, you know, I stuffed up, I shouldn't have said that, I'm really sorry, I find this hard. I think that can be huge. I think that can be so, like you say, like a real teachable moments for you and your kid.
Yeah.
You know, don't put too much pressure on yourselves because we're all so imperfect and we're all really trying, but we're not going to be the perfect parent all the time.
Can't be.
And you can't be. There's too much pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Has becoming a mum changed your sense of self and identity?
Yeah, it has. I think before I had Benji, I hadn't found what I wanted to do yet. Mm. And I was working in PR and I was working in a really great company with really great people, but it didn't feel right to me. And I didn't feel like I'd gotten to a stage in my career where I was really satisfied. And then having a kid made that even harder because I was like, I feel like I haven't achieved what I want to achieve. And I tried to go back to that job. It just didn't work out. So I quit. And then I was sort of just floating around for a long time. And I thought, I don't know what I'm doing. I felt this pressure of working it out. And what I found really hard was when I was a new mum, and even now, people would, you know, maybe come over pre-COVID times, and they'd ask Hugh all the questions. You know, this would just be friends or family or whatever. It would be like, how's work? How's this? How's that? How's the travel? And I wasn't getting any questions, you know. Mm. It was like I was invisible because the job was being a mum, and very few people think that that's worthy of asking questions about.
Yeah.
I found that really frustrating, and I still find that frustrating because I feel like it's not valued at all, really. Mm. It's like, oh, you know, the question would be, when are you going back to work? And you just want to punch them in the face. They're like, this is work. This is work.
I work really hard 24/7.
Yeah. So I found that really hard. I found other people talking about their jobs and what they were doing, and, you know, and seeing on Instagram people like absolutely excelling in whatever Instagram's they're doing.
The worst.
It's really, really hard. And I kept putting this pressure on myself to work out what I wanted to do. And I think it's one of the reasons I decided to enrol in a Masters of Social Work, because I was like, I need something to define me that's not motherhood. And it's something I've been enjoying and I'm sort of still doing. But I think that's what it came from, was like this search for like, what can people talk to me about that's not motherhood,
Yeah. You
know. But we shouldn't have to feel like that. But that's kind of just the way I feel like it is at the moment.
I think people don't know what to ask.
Yeah, I think like, you're right. But it's like, ask anything. Like, Ask about the labour.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
I find, like, asking how people are, but really asking how, like, How are you?
Mm.
You know, Instead of just, hey, going, oh, yeah, good.
Yeah,
thanks.
How are you really feeling?
Yeah.
And you know, treat it as, I don't know if there'd be many men listening to a mummification podcast. Hopefully there are. But even if, I mean, asking a new mum, like treating it like a job that she's been promoted to, you know, like what do you enjoy about it? Like what are you finding hard? What are you loving? Like I think women feel seen, and men feel seen when they're asked about what they're doing when they're a stay-at-home parent.
Mm.
I think it's really validating.
Yeah.
So I wish that happened more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy about it?
Oh, God.
At the moment.
Oh, good question.
It's your question.
It's my question. Oh, there's so much I enjoy about it. What I'm enjoying at the moment is with having two is seeing their relationship kind of blossom. I mean, most of the time they're hitting each other, but like there was this moment the other day where I was just like, oh, I just like flopped on the couch. My feet were so tired and I was like, I just need to lie down for a sec. And they were just playing together in Elsie's room and just laughing. And it didn't, you know, it only lasted like 5 minutes, but it was pure bliss. Like it was really beautiful to listen to. And Benji was laughing at Elsie because she's always trying to make him laugh. And just seeing that dynamic change from baby and toddler to kind of two little kids or toddler and little kid is really lovely.
Yeah.
It's really, really nice. And also I'm really loving Benji being really curious about everything now that he's five, I feel like everything's a question, which can be tiring. But it's also really interesting to see how he looks at the world, and he very much understands, obviously, that there's another baby coming, and he he's called the baby microphone because he wants to sing into his head. That was the reason. So he's called baby microphone, and he asks so many questions, and he's got this little baby doll that he sort of has been dressing lately, like finding little clothes for and putting in a little bag, which is really sweet. So, yeah, I just seeing how his brain works is really fascinating.
Do you ever run out of answers?
Oh, all the time.
Sometimes Marley asks me something all the time. And I'm like,
yeah.
Or we'll get to like our fifth why.
Yes.
And I don't know.
You're done. Yeah. I think I've told him to ask Siri a lot because he really got into, he thought her name was Miri. So it was like, I'm going to ask Miri. And that was great.
Because Miri knows God's asking.
But yeah, all the time. All the time. And usually the question he goes back to is, what was I before I was here? And like, my God. Like,
how amazing is that question?
And I said something once about like, oh, I don't know, being a star or something, like being stardust or just something so abstract. But he took it really literally, and so now he talks about being a star before he was born, and oh, it can get really confusing. But he often has big questions.
Big questions.
Yeah.
So on top of your study,
yeah,
you also have your So OCD website.
Yes.
And how did that come about? You do that with a friend?
Yeah. So a friend of mine who I went to school with, Rosie and I started So OCD. A couple of years ago we started having the idea of doing it, and it kind of, through lockdown, we worked on it and just decided there needed to be a place, kind of like a one-stop shop, I guess, for people who think they might have OCD or who do have OCD or maybe who think their child might have OCD and they want information about what it is, but also information about how they can get help. Because I think we both found that there's information out there, but it's so hard to find. And there's, you know, some great, you know, UK sites, great US sites, but there just wasn't a lot of really local kind of information that was really relevant. So we tried to put all that together in one place, and it was really like a good project to work on, I think, throughout lockdown. It was really good for us to do, and we've had some really great feedback, and in the process have met a lot of people online who you know, might be doing something similar. Or there's a guy in New South Wales who was putting together an OCD kind of reference, basically a website where you can type in your postcode and you can see what psychologists specialise in OCD around you. So just meeting all these people doing really amazing things in that area was really great as well. So, it's been a really fun thing to work on, actually.
And what's something empowering that you would say to other mums?
Oh, gosh. I think I would say that, oh, this is a hard one, isn't it? There's so much you could say. I think I would say that, like, and I really mean this wholeheartedly. I think it gets thrown around and sometimes it sounds a bit condescending, but I think being especially a stay-at-home mum or dad is like the hardest job in the world. It really is so hard. There's no KPIs. There's no one mentoring you necessarily. There's no feedback, or if there is feedback, it can be really brutal feedback.
Literally rubbish feedback.
Yeah. It's so grueling. So I think I would just say, if you're in the trenches, like like, you're an absolute hero, you know, you're an absolute superman or superwoman.
Yeah.
And you're making such a difference to a little person's life, even when it doesn't feel like you are. Like, I think every little, you know, every snotty nose that you wipe or every breakfast that you might begrudgingly be making is actually like having such a huge, profound effect on someone's life. And all those little jobs add up and they change a person's life. And it's just, it's, you know, you don't feel like you get much reward, I think, sometimes. But I think they're the superheroes.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your story with me.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
No, it was my pleasure. It was nice being in this fancy room.
I know. It was very relaxing.
Yeah. So quiet.
Yeah. I can just sit here for the next hour.
We can sit here and not talk for the next hour if you want.
It'd be great listening.
Thank you so much, Penny, for your honesty and openness. I really loved our chat today. There are links in the show notes to other podcast episodes Penny has been on to talk about OCD, on The Imperfects and No Filter with Mia Friedman. They're excellent episodes and really worth a listen to learn more about Penny and what living with OCD is like. There's also a link to Penny's website, soocd.com.au. If this episode has been triggering for you, I recommend you get in contact with Lifeline on 13 11 14. Mummification is produced and hosted by me, Brodie Matner. Our beautiful music is composed by Ben Talbot Dunn. If you're enjoying the show, please rate, review and subscribe. You'll be notified when a new episode is released and it helps us reach new audiences, which in turn will hopefully help more women feel less alone. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.